Monday podcast. I am publisher John Roerink, joined by Simon Schuster and Abigail Walls. Guys, let's talk a little bit about campaign finance reports. You spent a lot of time looking at that. Abigail, what are the top two or three takeaways you took from Friday?
I think we looked at the number of candidates who chose not to file by Friday's deadline, either couldn't or wouldn't. Most of the outliers still today are incumbent Democrats, mostly in Southeast Michigan. I think another interesting note to hit is, and it's been on our list at MERS a few times, is the 71st District, held by Representative Tom Barrett. There's been a lot of noise on both sides. Republicans say he's safe. Democrats are really favoring their candidate, former Representative Teresa Abed. But the numbers shook out pretty interesting. For a former representative, Teresa Abed didn't really clean up as much of the Lansing money as one might have hoped. It mostly went to Representative Barrett, and he out-fundraised her this period.
Is that just out-hustling, or is it the advantage of incumbency versus challenger?
I think that's a good question. I just think you would have expected for someone with some experience running and winning a race, you would have seen a little bit more financial support for someone with so much star power. An easy seat, well, not an easy seat against that particular candidate, but, you know, potentially a pickup with the way that that seat leans in the current representative's voting record.
Okay. And Simon, you're looking at a late filer today.
Yes, that's correct. And I have to point this one out because I just find how strange it is as a campaign. Vijay Kumar in the 103rd District, he's completely self-financing his own campaign. He's donated about $137,000 of his own money to it thus far. Has almost no other donations in that way and has spent almost all of it. You'll get all the details in tonight's capsule, but suffice to say, he's dropped tens of thousands of dollars in political consulting and advertising for his district.
All right, that'll be something to look forward to. We also have PAC filing later today. We'll have some more information on that in tomorrow's edition. Guys, I want to talk a little bit about the upcoming week. Obviously, we have another convention. Abigail, who should we expect to speak from Michigan's perspective?
I think we've heard from former Governor Jennifer Granholm. Flint Mayor Weaver is on deck to speak, as well as Detroit Mayor Mike Duggan. And I think that wraps up for the DNC Michigan Speaker Delegation.
There's one minor figure as well, a healthcare worker that Hillary Clinton met on a campaign stop. She will also be speaking.
Henrietta Ivey, I believe, is her name.
That's correct.
She's speaking Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be interesting to watch. With that, we're going to go to, I've got an interview with Steve Mitchell from Mitchell Research and Communications. And Kyle's got to interview with Representative Kostowski from the Michigan House, and we'll go from there. We are joined today by a special guest, Steve Mitchell, the CEO of Mitchell Research and Communications. Steve, you just unveiled a presidential poll for the Michigan Association of Health Plans that was taken prior to this week that shows Hillary Clinton holding a little bit of an edge, 6 points. Talk a little about where we're at, and do you think this week made any difference for Trump?
I think that the parties always get a bounce out of their convention. You have a question as to how much of a bounce that they get. I saw a survey released earlier last week on Wednesday before presidential candidate Trump spoke. And at that time, the Reuters Ipsos poll had closed by a wide margin as a result of the first 3 days of the convention. So I think he possibly will get a bump. The question is how long the bump lasts, given that the Democrats will be meeting next week in Philadelphia to nominate Hillary Clinton. At the end of the day, it all washes out, and Labor Day, it all starts over again. But I think that given the speeches, even though they obviously had some problems with Melania Trump's speech with the Ted Cruz incident and others, that the Republicans will come out of the convention and Trump will come out stronger than he went in.
So it sounds like you don't think either of those problems are detrimental in the long range.
In the long range, the issues of the conventions, whether the Democratic convention or the Republican convention, the issue of who the vice presidential choices are going to be far overshadowed by three debates that are going to happen, two presidential debates and a vice presidential debate, as well as the ongoing campaigns between the two parties. So they're important. They're reference points that people look at, but at the end of the day, they are just steps on the way up towards the presidential election on November the 8th.
In presenting the results, you seem to indicate that you were surprised by the size of the undecided block right now.
Normally, you'd have an undecided block of maybe 10-12%. It's 27%, and it's 27% pretty much across the board. Young and old voters, with the exception of African Americans. African Americans, who at the end of the day always end up voting about 90% for the Democratic candidate, whether it's Barack Obama or John Kerry or Al Gore. In this particular presidential race, they've already decided, and by about a 90-0 basis, they're supporting presidential candidate Hillary Clinton. So that also indicates that there's a lot of room for Trump to grow, but in terms of a very key part of the vote, which represents 13% of the vote, you know, 90% of those people are going to vote for Hillary Clinton, but they've made up their mind. So there's no undecideds that are going to be factored in later on. So she's got as many of the African Americans as she's going to get. And that's, so again, that provides a little more room for Trump.
Okay. You also looked at the job approval rating for Governor Rick Snyder. Clearly, he suffered a significant damage following Flint. Talk a little about this. Where he was, where he is, and do you think that's recoverable over the next year and a half, or is he permanently damaged?
Well, look, I mean, he was at 56% a year ago. He's now at 36%. That's a pretty big drop in terms of his job approval, and it can all be related to the situation in Flint. And I think, yes, it will go up. Now, is he going to get over 50%? I think that's going to be difficult, given the fact that Democrats didn't like him in the first place, and the Flint water problem has really allowed them to vent about all the issues about which they did not like Snyder. So I think the governor can come back. The question is how he does remediating the problem.
Mm-hmm. What was interesting was the right track, wrong track numbers, despite Flint, didn't really change that much.
No, they didn't. I think you still have more voters than not saying that Michigan is on the right track than the wrong track. 43% say right track, 44% say wrong track. But that's not nearly as bad as the job approval that Governor Snyder has.
Okay. And our state legislature, what are people thinking about them?
Well, 46% of the voters approve of the job that the Michigan State Legislature is doing. Of that, of those voters, however, 48% disapprove of the job he's doing. So it's like everything else in politics today. It's partisan-driven. Republicans, a vast majority of Republicans, think the Michigan legislature is doing a good job, and not so much of the Democrats. So it's partisan-driven, but they're still, doing almost 50%. So it's just 50-50, a basic wash in terms of whether or not they think that they're doing a good job and whether or not voters approve of the job the Michigan legislature is doing.
Okay. Let's talk real briefly about next week. The Democrats are meeting in Philadelphia for their convention to nominate former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. You've listened to the message that Trump sent out. You've listened to the message that was delivered in terms of the Republican convention. Do you see any openings as far as a message or things you think Hillary Clinton should push next week?
I mean, I think Hillary Clinton will push what she's been pushing, that Donald Trump is xenophobic, that he is anti-minorities, he's anti-women. She's going to be using the same messaging the Democrats have been using on Donald Trump throughout this campaign cycle. They'll just do it in stronger tones, but it will be basically those ideas that Trump just is not suitable to be president of the United States, which is why, if you notice, last night Trump was introduced, last Thursday night, Trump was introduced by Ivanka Trump in a video that preceded the speech by both Ivanka Trump and Donald Trump really discussed about what he has done for minorities and what he has done for women, because they know that's an area that they're really going to find themselves getting strongly attacked.
What was your takeaway from his speech? Do you think he did a good job? Did he do what he needed to do?
He presented a cohesive message as to what's wrong with America and why he's going to make it a safer place to live. My sense is he may have shouted too much rather than to bring down the tone. But I think that this is going to be an election on which the lines are clearly drawn. People who are concerned about the influx of immigrants, whether they're from south of the border or whether they're from the Middle East, people who are concerned about the uptick in violence against police and who are concerned about their safety both inside the United States as well as abroad from terrorists, are going to be voting for Donald Trump. That's what he's going to be selling. She's going to be saying that we've got to have a more global viewpoint. We've got to take a look at this. She is having some of the mothers of blacks who have been killed speaking at the convention, as opposed to the sheriff of Milwaukee County, who talked about the fact that blue lives matter. So there's going to be, at the end of the day, there's going to be a clear difference between who voters want in the 2016 election. And at this point, you've got two candidates, neither of whom are very popular, who are trying to figure out a way that they can somehow get to a majority of the electoral votes. The Democrats start off with an advantage. There's going to be very few positive ads. These are going to be negative ads. They're basically going to be tearing each other down from now until November the 8th, as they have been doing for this entire election cycle. So it's going to be a nasty election. Every election's nasty. Every 2 years or every 4 years, we say this is the nastiest election ever. This actually may be the nastiest election ever, unlike most of the other years where it's just as nasty as the election before it.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us, Steve. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Joining us now for the podcast is the representative out of Westland. He's Robert Kosalski. Thanks for joining us today.
How you doing, Kyle?
I'm doing well. Thanks for joining us at MERS World Headquarters.
It's a great place. I've never been here.
Yeah. Well, this is where the magic happens each and every Monday.
I see all the good work coming out of MERS, so that's good.
Well, thanks for joining us here. I understand that you have, and I guess I didn't count them all up. I just get your press releases, so okay. I know that you've had a lot of bills introduced.
My staff's doing her job, right?
Yeah, she's doing a great job. All Renee right, is good. Amazing. Now, you have 64 bills that have been introduced, the most, I think, in the Democratic caucus.
Without double-checking, I would say so. And, you know, you only get five a month. So when you start calculating it that way, it's pretty tough. You have to be a little strategic when you're going to put some of these bills in. So
really specific here, and I want to, we're not going to have time to talk about all of them, but there's a few that I do want to talk about. And the first one is one that has actually gotten some action on the House floor, is over in the Senate.
Sure.
Has to do with an issue that I've never really thought much about, but the identity of foster kids being stolen.
Right.
How did you get clued in on this?
Well, the biggest thing is that, you know, I have two adopted kids, and I've always thought about trying to help the system. And actually, Representative Kavanaugh was looking into this, and I took it over when he didn't come back because he knows how important it is for me with kids and foster kids. And what we found out is, like from Vista Maria, which is in Dearborn Heights, these young ladies would go and get a job, and they would find out that their identity was stolen, and nobody was ever checking it. So through DHHS, which I want to give them a big plug because they were all for it, they had no issue with it. So anybody that's 14 and under would have a credit check, or 14 and over, I'm sorry, would have a credit check. And to make sure that when you go get a job, try and open an account, nobody's using your identity. I mean, how shattering is that for a young person when their first bank account, you know, doesn't make sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, for me, I just found out somebody took my credit card yesterday.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah, and they charged $700 at a Home Depot in Georgia.
Do you want it back?
Yeah, that would be nice. Or whatever materials they bought, I might be able to use them.
No, I say I could give it back to you if you want.
But anyway, that bill is in the Senate Judiciary Committee right now.
It's actually on the floor. It passed out of the Senate Family, Children, and Seniors. And thank you to the great Senator Emmons. She put that up for me. She knew how important it was to me, so I really appreciate it. So it's waiting on the Senate floor. I hope it comes before lame duck.
Well, now another bill that I know that you'd certainly like to see is increased revenue sharing through local municipalities, because they have taken up to $6 billion.
Actually, it's $7.5
billion. Is it really
for
now?
For the last 12 fiscal years.
So how are you going to pay for this?
Well, you know, I always, whenever I come up with something, I want to try and at least come up with a mechanism to pay for it. And it's called sports gambling. It's done every day in Michigan. I see it with my own eyes. I know there's bookies out there. So maybe the bookies won't like me. But I can tell you this, a lot of other people will. The casinos will love it. This could actually bring in an attraction to all these casinos. It's just not the three in Detroit. It's just not Mount Pleasant. It's any casino, Indian tribe, whatever. If you want it, you can have it. And we actually had William Hill, president, come down. He's from Vegas. He is the biggest sports betting guy out there. And he said he did a little compromise of looking in Nevada. He just did a little area. And he thought we could generate easily $300 million for this. I think it's more.
$300 million for the state?
Yes, for the state. And that's a mild, mild calculation. I really believe that. There's so many people. Michigan State game? I bet you everybody bets on it. Super Bowl? Come on. So I'm looking at that. You know, state shared revenues. I work for a city for, you know, close to 25 years. And we always get cut. And I'm not saying anybody did anything wrong. I just think there's a way that we should calculate the system. I think that cities are doing a good job, townships, counties. Everybody's trying to do the right thing. They're cutting their workforce, their collaboration with other cities. I mean, my two cities, they've done a great job. My mayor, Bill Wild, and Susan Rowe from Wayne, they have combined many services, fire, parks and rec, and so forth. And that just goes back to the old EBIT program that you know, we put hoops up and said everybody started jumping through them. Mm-hmm. I don't think we should have to. If a city is fiscally strong and they're showing that they're trying to make a difference, they should get more money.
And so anyway, so the sports booking thing, there is some federal hurdles there isn't
is.
There? Okay.
There is. And, you know, great respect to Ray Franz. He took this up, and that was one of his questions. And I actually agreed with him on this. He said, why spend money on the legality of all this? Let New Jersey do it. I said, that's fine. But I've talked to everybody on reg reform. They all said they'd vote for it today.
Is that right?
Yeah. I shouldn't say everybody. I've talked to 80-some percent of the reg reform. They would vote for it today.
And, you know, they would be challenged in court. And,
right.
But, I mean, there's a significant upside
exactly.
If we prevail on this, because only Vegas right now has sports gaming. Mm-hmm. And if we had it in our state, that would seem to attract just not the folks here in Michigan,
right.
Ohio, Indiana, Canada.
Exactly.
Because everybody wants to put a little action on a game.
You can walk, or you can't walk across. You could go by bridge or tunnel to Canada, right outside my district, to Canada, and you can bet on sports. So why could you do that? It's not right. And I just think we should have it here. You know what? Even one better, Kyle. So we have the lottery out there, okay? So when someone tells me, no, it's gambling. But I also see somebody at my party store spend $200 on a three-digit number. That's gambling, okay? There's no difference. I'm not going to tell someone how they can spend their money. If they want to put $20 on the Lions, I wouldn't suggest putting it on the Lions, but, you know.
Maybe if they're getting a lot of points.
Yeah, maybe a lot of points. You know, let them do it. But, you know, Ray Franz told me, he said, let's wait to see what happens, and we'll go forward with it. I'm like, you know, how fair can that be? That's pretty fair.
All right. Well, and there's nothing to say that you can't introduce this next term.
If I get elected again, which is in my hopes,
right? Which seems like that would be a pretty safe bet here. One more bill that I want to touch on before we talk about elections and so forth. You have a bill that I've often thought, God, this would be great, where you can't camp out in the left-hand lane on a highway. How often do we see this?
On the way up here today, but, you know, one of the things, it's already a law.
Right. I mean, you can't camp out there.
Yeah.
So what does this do?
This will actually make sure that state police can pull you over more. It's more awareness of this. A lot of people just sit in there and camp, and they don't really know it. So it needs more signs up there. And that's really the big thing. Now, there's a couple of technical definitions that we're switching around in this bill. But really, this is an awareness bill because I do it myself. you know, I started driving, I just get camped on the left lane. I look behind me and there's 20 cars behind me.
Right.
And now, on the way up here today, I drove the right lane except the pass. I actually did the right thing the whole way up here.
Is that right?
Yeah.
You stayed behind the slow poke in the left hand lane?
No. I was in the right hand lane.
Uh-huh.
And then I would pass.
Oh, good.
So usually I did sit in the left hand lane until a constituent told me about this bill. I'm like, very interesting. You know, so
now,
we took it up.
Now, is this a primary offense that a cop can pull you over for camping out?
Yes.
Is that right?
Yep, you can get a ticket. Now, when we talked to them, they said they're going to warn people, you know, just for the awareness, but you can get a ticket for it, which is very interesting.
All right, okay. So have you gotten anywhere with that particular bill? Have you talked to anybody?
You know, Pete Battaglia, who's the chair of transportation, has told me he's going to give me a hearing. We had a lot of tweaks to it, so he said he was going to take it up, and Pete and I served on the tourism board together, and he was the chair, and I was the vice chair, so we have a good relationship. I believe him.
Mm-hmm. Where do all these ideas come from?
I have great staff. I have just an awesome staff that they come up with a lot of good things, but I'm also a little crazy maybe. I'll sit at home, like, I'll give you an example, Kyle. So I'm sitting there watching, and all of a sudden breaking news, you know, school shooting. And I thought to myself, this is just crazy. I mean, this is too bizarre. How can we not be stopping this? So I grabbed the pad out and I started making up a list of stuff. And one was to allow, it's a bill out there of mine, is to allow retired policemen to work in the schools for income tax credit. Work so many hours a day. They can carry, they can do whatever they want. They'll take care of things. Then I started thinking outside the box even more. I said, you know, Open Meetings Act, which I firmly believe in. I do. But I also think if you're talking about child safety, that school board should be able to go in a closed meeting and discuss how they're going to take care of kids. That's what my belief is. So I came up with 3 or 4 other bills that we were looking at. You know, I got Representative Iden involved and Shepard. We all went in on it. And they're like, yeah, these are pretty good ideas. And we're waiting for a hearing on this one.
Wow. All right. Well, let's talk about elections because obviously we're only a couple weeks away now from the primary election.
Right.
You've knocked some doors. What's the sense you're getting from people? What is the feedback that you're getting?
I think they want change. And the reason I say that is at the top of the ticket, I think it's created a movement. And I don't know if it's a good movement or a bad movement, but it has gotten people involved. I personally think this is going to be the highest number of people voting. You know, now there's not straight ticket voting and all that. I don't know how that's going to affect it. I think I know. But you know what? We're both hungry. Both sides of the aisle are hungry. And you can see everybody out there working. We have some great candidates. I mean, we have candidates that are splendid. I'm sure the Republicans do as well. It's going to be very interesting. But when I'm knocking the door and I'm talking to people, the roads are the biggest thing that I hear. I mean,
The roads still.
I mean, and they want them fixed. You know, it's a safety issue to me. And I told them that I voted yes on every road package but the last one because I want good roads too. I don't want people getting injured out there. I don't want them messing up their cars and everything else. And I just thought for the little extra money that people would pay, especially with gas prices right now, I just wish we would have just did a whole gas tax. People would not even have known. They're not going to get a 20% increase on their registration, nothing. And we got a bunch of bills in for that too. You know, we had a mileage bill that I'm not really pursuing anymore, but I was on the overweight trucks on the last package that came in. We need to fix our roads.
Yeah. And obviously the package that passed last term is out there and won't take effect for some time.
Right.
But is that something that you see the Democrats taking up if you were to take majority?
Oh, I'm sure of it. I mean, it's one of those things that's just philosophy, you know, on that. And everybody knows I'm kind of a moderate on these issues. And I just think whatever's best. I mean, we should be able to come together and sit down and come up with a good plan. We actually did a year and a half ago. I think we came up with an awesome plan. We hit it, everybody equally, trucks, everybody, gas tax. I think that was a good one. And I understand, you know, Speaker Cotter, I understand what he was doing, and he wanted to get it passed. He wanted roads fixed, and I get it. So I just couldn't vote for that one.
Last question I wanted to ask you here. Obviously, you've been to other districts beyond your own in the attempt of getting majority at a certain point, preferably, I'm sure, for you this year.
Right.
What do you think the chances are of the Dems taking control after this election?
Well, I'm very optimistic. I'm very positive about it. You know, I always say, as long as the best person gets elected, I'm good with that. whoever that is. Obviously, I wouldn't mind being in control. I haven't been in, 3.5 years now. But I find ways to try and circumvent that, I'm not bragging, but 11 PAs are hanging on my wall today. And it's I just believe it's my ability to walk across the aisle and work on projects with people. I think it's going to be very close.
Now, you're a sports guy. Obviously, you know a little bit about sports betting, so let's put some odds on this.
All right.
2-1 odds?
Oh,
4-5?
Nah, not even close. Okay. I would say it's probably a -110, if you know what that is.
So, if we're doing baseball
gambling. Right. Yeah, it's very close. I really believe that. I think that the candidates are going to really come out. And I know a lot of people working in all districts. I see it. It's going to be interesting. I'll tell you one thing I would love to happen. It happened back in, 92? I would love shared responsibility.
Would you really?
I would love it. Now, that would be my second choice, obviously.
But right, you want majority first.
Yeah, majority. But, I think that would be awesome to have because every month you're switching chairs. And I really believe if you really want the legislature to work together, I think it should be that way anyway. Just switch it every month. One of the things I hear when I go out from people is, why do you guys always fight? Why do you guys always do that? And my comment is, ma'am, I don't fight with anybody up there. I try and find solutions. I try and work with people. And everybody thinks that we're like at each other's throats. We're really not. I mean, you could sit in a meeting with whoever, 7 Republicans and me, and everything's fine. Just perception, But I'll go even money. How's that?
Even money. Yeah. Wow, boy, that's bold. And
I can count to 6 right now.
Wow.
I can count 6 seats right now.
That you think that it's going to be taken?
Yeah, that I'm pretty sure. The other ones, there's going to be some interesting battle lines out there. There's no doubt about it.
All right, well, we'll be following it with you.
All right.
Robert Kosolsky, State Representative from Westland. Appreciate the time.
Thanks, Kyle.
That wraps up this week's edition of the MERS Monday podcast. I am MERS publisher John Roerink. A special thanks to Kyle Malin, Abigail Walls, Simon Schuster, Representative Kosowski, and Steve Mitchell from the Mitchell Research and Communications team. We'll talk to you next week. Also, special thanks to Michigan Press Association for supporting this and every podcast. Have a great week.